Oh, good evening. Get this technical thing out of the way here. Welcome to Ritu. Back from LA for a minute. Just a minute. And a new face. You're Margaret. Let's do introductions around.
Donald,
Wendy,
Lauren,
Kitty,
Dan, Lee,
Britt,
Jane,
Julian,
and Angie. Nice she could be here. I left you all in the lurch last week. I didn't make any preparation for being gone at all. And I felt very badly about that when I got up to Chikoji. I thought, what was I thinking? Obviously, I wasn't thinking anything at all. I'm sorry. That was... So you'll have to tell me what you did and what you said and what... What happened?
It was casual.
Well, of course, but... Yes?
We had only a few people. What, five?
Well, that's about right, because four of us were at Chikoji.
And one new guy from the area.
Huh.
He's so close he can walk. He pointed over that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, oh, he's
Vipassana group. Oh, a Wednesday night group.
Yeah.
Well, I'm supposed to go there tomorrow night, so maybe I'll find out.
Yeah. What's his name? Ken? Ken?
Old guy or young?
Older guy. White, very white hair, white beard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Looks like Santa.
Yes, yes.
Nice guy.
Yeah, very nice very guy.
So, yeah, so we chatted about, you know, people's practice a little bit. We chatted about...
Good.
Well, we got a debriefing from Samia about the...
Oh, great.
He came through the kitchen, you know.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Sounded really delicious.
It was.
Yeah.
It was. Unbelievably good. Jane did a fabulous job. Just straight through. Three meals a day for 7 days. Every single one on time. Totally vegan. Delicious. It was amazing. It was a good session. It was truly a good session. A lot of people came. For Chikoji, it was a big group. And it went very well. So we're back to the ox herding pictures. Riding the ox home. We've done the first two, is that right? Yeah. Thank you, Wendy. Well, the first one is searching the spiritual quest. In which Dido says practice is exhaustive self-examination. I don't think that ever stops, actually. I think it's always that way because our self keeps changing all the time. And so we get ourselves all cleared up and straightened out, and then something will happen and we have to start all over again in some ways. So clarifying and checking, just keep checking, it certainly goes on. from the beginning to the end. And in the beginning, we just begin to notice that we have a story. That perhaps what we think of as ourself is a kind of manufactured accumulation of a lot of stories that somehow make up something we can live with as a self. It sometimes has terrible things in it, woundings and betrayals, but we found a way to accommodate those and to keep them as part of our personality and our story. But as we sit, we begin to realize that there are many more things than we usually call myself. Other things that also are a part of our makeup, physically and mentally both, and that we've overlooked or we've unconsciously rejected, or that just don't quite fit in with the way we would like to see ourselves. Oh, I'm not really like that. Until we sit, and then slowly we begin to have a sense of how big this life is, how much there is. So finding the traces is the second one. Beginning to discover others who are making the same kind of inquiry. Finding a place to sit. Always a wonderful discovery. Oh, there's somewhere to go. And in doing that, to really attend to sitting and make sitting more and more a part of one's life. And be willing to go into it a bit. To really go into what comes up and to allow oneself to feel it. To feel this life as it breathes and lives. So then the third one is seeing the ox. This is a kind of funny metaphor. There's this big animal in the pictures that first we just get a sense of, and then we see the traces of it, the tracks on the ground, and then we actually glimpse what Dido calls the true self. He said, it takes time to shine our mind's light on anything, to clearly discern rather than processing data. It's a kind of American way of saying, depending on prajna, the mind is no hindrance. The light of Buddha nature, the light of the true self, shines in spite of all the various acrobatics that our mind is usually up to. And as we get familiar with our sitting, as we deepen our practice and extend it, especially extend it and deepen it, we become familiar with what lives us, you could say. And are willing to sometimes let it just be that way. We have a lot of resistance, a lot of levels of resistance, physical and psychological. And it's very well to respect the resistances that come up, to really acknowledge them and face them. Buddha said, never accept anything that anybody says until you can confirm and verify it in your own experience. He said, including anything that I say. It's very important to remember that. But it's also important as we deepen our experience of meditation to allow it to take its full, I was going to say shape, but it's not exactly like that, but to completely live. And to accept it. And as Dido also says, we often tend to get a glimpse and immediately start to intellectualize it, create some kind of analysis of what's going on, but it doesn't work, of course. And so the best advice is, just as all the advice is, whatever comes up, to let it go and make room for what the next appearance is. It's always funny for me to go through these because I want to keep going and say, but that's not enough. You know, there's 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10, but we're taking them one little bit at a time. So I'll leave it at that. And we can go on to catching the ox next week. Are there questions, comments? Yes.
When you notice really, like, I guess, darker, more, I guess, more aggressive aspects of yourself, and how do you do that without, like, without getting caught up? It just seems, I mean, it obviously, like, a change of behavior, it seems like you consciously have to say, okay, I want to do this, not, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just, you know, the trap of self seems to still be there. Like, I don't know, like,
yeah.
Goody two-shoes kind of annoy me as much as...
Yes.
You know, to think that you could just keep on following rules and everything, you know. Anyway, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's the middle way, you know. They're both extremes, goody two-shoes and the devil. You know? And it's all in us and everything in between. So usually what we do is try to choose the things that make us look the best to other people and bury everything else and hope nobody notices, including often ourselves. We don't even want to see it ourselves. So practice is a gift to us of being able to begin to notice what's all there and to accept it and to know that it's in all human beings. Because then it's, you know, in a way it's a problem, because how do we live with this? How do we live with other people if we're this way? And yet they're this way too. So we can choose. This is a place where we can actually, with discriminating mind, a careful discriminating mind, we can choose how to be. We can choose to tear each other limb from limb, or whatever else our pleasure would be that would be careless of other people's feelings and live life. Or we can begin to develop some kind of relationship with the other that gives us a different sense of ourself, a self that's not separate from everything else, but carries along with everyone all possibilities. So one of the reasons we take the Bodhisattva vows and the precepts is to confirm our intention not to be good. Because sometimes, in the terms of those, it doesn't look so good. But to do what's best as best we can. What's wise and compassionate as best we can. Jane?
Julian's question brings up for me too is I'm really grateful for Zazen, because I can, when these so-called negative fear, you know, hatred, greed, and ignorance come up, this is a practice that helps me to keep the door open and really keep looking at that. And it's really hairy territory, because where do you stand? How do you abide with that while you're looking at this very nice, not nice?
Yes.
It's almost like safe ground, the cushion, because you can keep the door open and keep a good look at it and know that. You can hold your cushion, and you'll be okay.
Well, you need to remember that you're actually present, and that all of those are thoughts. The reality isn't what you're thinking. It's stuff that's coming up. So it's potential. But if we're just sitting quietly on a cushion, even though a whole Stephen King novel is playing in our head, it's still just an idea. It's just a thought. So as the instruction for Zazen always is, when you find your mind drifting, bring it back to the present moment to be right here. And being on your cushion, yeah. But in the room with the people, to remember where you really are and who you really are.
And that helps, because even though it feels like it's just a thought, for me it feels like strong emotion.
Yes. Yes, we can drop right in.
I have it too, because I mean, I might feel it off the cushion and it feels, I mean, it moves me.
Yeah. You know,
and it's being on the cushion where I can sit still and keep feeling that and thinking that and still stay in the room. I mean, it helps me to do it a different way when I'm off the cushion. Oh, here it is again. And I can remember that it's moving me and it's not as solid as I think it is.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we can fall into the pit of it and be so carried by it that it seems terribly real, and we enact it as if it were real. Yes. Yeah. Keeping the door open, I like that. Yeah. Yes.
You're saying too, Julian, about the precepts and the vows we take. It's not about necessarily good or being good, but it's about doing the best in the situation. Is that?
Mm-hmm.
Just how do we know what's the best in the situation?
Oh, we don't. Only when it's all over.
It's tragic.
It's a drag. It's hard because we can't know. It's why it's important to one, trust ourselves. Trust ourselves and like ourselves enough that we can put ourselves on the edge that way and not know. Now, if we're afraid and we don't want to appear in front of everybody and don't know how it'll come out and we might look kind of strange, then it's easy to lose that intention. So it depends on real self-confidence first and self-forgiveness, because sometimes whatever we do is a mistake and we have to be willing to forgive ourselves and go on and try some more. Sometimes we think when we practice like this that it's all going to get easy and we'll know what to do, but it doesn't work that way. We're flying by the seat of our pants most of the time. And trusting ourselves and trusting the world that we are at the same time. Not that it's necessarily a safe world, as you know. It doesn't necessarily have to be a safe world. But if we're safe, then we can bring ourselves anywhere and be a part of that world. And the precepts and the vows, if we're completely literal about them, can trip us up at the same time. No, we have to let them go at the same time that they hold us and guide us. And life itself tells us when we're making a mistake. That's why we don't have koans so much in this practice, because life itself presents us with a koan over and over again. How about this?
Sometimes the signs could be confusing, though. I don't know, at least to me, I mean, what that's kind of trips me up sometimes is sometimes it, like something could happen, you know, and it makes you, whatever, think doing the right thing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. There's a part of me that says, well, do you, does that, I don't know, maybe I'm like, maybe I'm like paranoid or something, but like, it just seems any kind of outside thing could be, like in the movies, how easily we are influenced by movies.
Mm.
You know, like.
Yes.
You know, if the main character looked really, like, ugly, I don't think we'd relate so much to him as, yes. You know, as, you know, as, like,
yes.
You know, handsome actor or whatever. So it's hard.
Yeah, that we cultivate discernment. You know, that's what our intellect is for, is to carefully try to see how things really are. And if there's a question, to sit with it instead of acting. One thing that we often do is to act too soon and to react rather than just sit down and let the whole thing cook for a while and tell us what to do. We're more likely to make a wise decision if we allow ourselves some time and space for it. And still we are affected by our context. Whatever world we find ourselves in has a whole set of values that we either go along with and fit in with or struggle upstream against. And again, it's a place where we have a choice. You know, and sometimes it's a very painful and difficult choice. And people are killed for making the wrong choice, or, you know, it can be severe. Lee?
Julie, is it?
Yes.
You know, I've been having some anger and frustration come up. It's interesting, in the Vipassana tradition, from what I've studied, the Buddha kind of clumped fear, paranoia, anger, frustration, all under the heading aversive states of mind. And that they, I know it's probably not done in Zen, but it's just another, you know, they're like tools that you can pull out to deal with certain states of mind, whatever's happening. But you just kind of, you acknowledge it as aversion, and then you do. You do what Thich Nhat Hanh says in his little take on what's the middle way. One way is to react, you know, to act out on it, to react, to let it run you. Is another way to say it. And then the other extreme is to repress it, or like Pema Trojan, who's a Shogun Trungpa student, she said, you scratch the itch. And of course, scratching just makes it fester and makes it worse. And we, you know, there's any number of ways we scratch the itch. TV, me, I get on the phone and talk to my friends. You know, any way we avoid or run from the issue. But the middle way, what Thich Nhat Hanh recommends is, and it's painful, like Angie says, just embracing it, just being present with it, not reacting, indulging, and not repressing it by running to some other distraction.
The result of that, like, seems, like, for example, like before sitting, you know, maybe you're a bit agitated, or there's feel, I guess, sensations of like I don't know what you'd call it, for the sake of you know, aggression or something like that, and but if you just like to sit very and just it's hard to explain exactly, but I do notice it does eventually like after a few minutes or whatever calms down and you achieve more tranquil. tranquility.
So one of my teachers, he said, the thing is, he used to challenge me by saying, Lee, can you be present with the breath and entertain defilements at the same time? Which aversion would be included as a defilement, or desire, wanting, not wanting, you know, any kind of, because really it's just our own judgment about it. If you notice, they're all impermanent, you're never stuck in one thing all the time. So that's wisdom. So he would say, if you can be really present with the breathing or your experience is sitting, he would challenge me and say, well, you can't really entertain the defilements while, you know, he'd say, find out for your own self is if that's true. And Thich Nhat Hanh again, he uses little Tui in My Heart, the Sun, a beautiful little book. He starts it by saying, you know, this girl was upset because her apple juice was all cloudy and everybody else's apple juice was all clear. So I said, well, let's just wait, you know, instead of reacting, getting all bent out of shape, my own words, but he said, let's, and then sure enough, it settled down. And that's his, you know, a beautiful little metaphor for what our practice is.
But there's another side to it, too, that is important to remember, that sometimes there are things that we need to be excited and upset about in order to do something about them. So it isn't that we just wipe out every surge of emotion that courses through us, because it's information as well. It's telling us something. So it's important to, as I always say, not be a doormat and just turn into a kind of neutral, unactive person, because you need to know clearly what that is and find out where it's coming from. And if there may be a situation that needs attention and it's calling attention to the situation. That's why we say we study the self. It really takes a big study in order to find our way. If there's, with little everyday stuff, it's not so difficult. But for bigger ones, including, you know, the big deals of greed, anger, and ignorance, you know, we can get really angry and not even know why. You know, that there's something else going on. So it also helps to check it out with other people. A friend of mine did that the other day. She wrote to me and she said, "Why am I not content?" And I wrote back and I said, "Well, this happened and this happened and this happened. Of course you're not content." It will take a while to get over those things.
Yeah, so I found that, like, it's some people maybe, like, talk to me for, like, you know, I feel so bad or whatever, but, like, you know, in that week something really awful has happened.
Yes.
Them.
Yes.
And it's, it, you know, I mean, yeah. What are you going to do? I mean,
that's what happened.
Yes.
Yeah. Buddha never promised that we wouldn't feel bad. He just said, don't feel bad on top of the feeling bad.
Don't add to it.
Life is too short. Well, we'll catch the ox next week. That'll be exciting. Thank you all.